conversation between pre-service and in-service teachers and teacher educators about research and practice. For episode 15, I'm joined by one in-service teacher and one university teacher educator to discuss Carla Linguetti and colleagues' 2021 paper, Stop Mocking, Start Respecting, An Activist Approach Meets African-Australian Refugee Background Young Women in Grassroots Football, from Qualitative Research in Sport, Exercise and Health. We'll begin with an around-the-table discussion. Over to you, Michael.
I think this week's blog and paper took the topic from last week in ecological dynamics to a whole new level. The critical conscious understanding that your environment and the barriers that surround you and the opportunity to create social change from those barriers really took me back and made me reflect on how that could be applied in PE in my own sphere. The challenge that the author certainly made in the paper was the notion that top-down change does not have a reciprocal effect with the students and athletes that we're working with every day. And the core values and the that programs lay out should not focus on those changes from a top-down approach, but more so build the foundation with the students and the athletes that they're working with and garner their feedback for their aspirations and needs. And this notion of co-creation and building the foundation that was in the paper was certainly a really interesting piece. And it lasted 4 months in this paper. And I'm trying to figure out how that would look in phys ed. How can we build the foundation? How long would that take with our students? And then how can we create a culturally responsive curriculum so that it delivers on their own aspirations and needs? Another thing that was interesting to me was the author suggested a strengths-based approach for these refugee students in sport and applying their capabilities towards participation. So reflecting critically on their barriers and challenges will allow them, as we spoke about last week, for multiple ways to belong and to perform different tasks. And then finally, the activist pedagogy, which the author spoke about in great detail, is the idea that co-creation of these programs can use aspirations and move beyond the deficit labels of at risk or vulnerable populations that we are succumbed to when we speak about a lot. Instead of labeling those populations as such, now we're able to create a strengths-based approach, garner feedback, respond to students, collect data, teach, observe, analyze the responses, and then drive social change moving forward. It's, very obvious to me that there's inequality in female sports and female programming from youth all the way on up in the States here. The two examples that I can think of, first of all, as a football, soccer guy myself, the U.S. women's national team certainly has been a victim of this inequality discrimination, with the men's side certainly garnering more salary, even though the women's team is far more successful. And then more recently on social media, I don't know if you have seen it, but March Madness is currently going on with the NCAA basketball. And there was a post on social media highlighting the facilities that the men's teams were receiving, and then another picture of what the women's teams were receiving. And the affordances and the facilities that both of the men's and the women's were huge differences, and it really highlighted some of the organizational challenges and discriminatory practices that still exist today in sport. And finally, this idea that we as teachers or simply depositing information for our students' consideration is a deficit-based approach based on what the author highlighted. And so using sport and moreover physical education as a way to advocate for social change beyond our classroom is, brings home the meaning of physical education, because we do not want to dehumanize phys ed and leave no room for student feedback, because we as teachers have to be really responsive to our students and our athletes as well.
Thanks, Michael. I'm going to kind of carry on with some of Michael's thoughts too, where the authors and first and foremost, Carla and her co-investigators alongside of these phenomenal women deserve a tremendous amount of credit, and certainly points to how far we still need to come, myself included, when we think about, a democratic approach to teaching and, in this case, physical education. So kudos to the authors and this group of fine young women. I'm going to center on what Michael mentioned about, aspirations. And I know Ash has written about this in his literature and his research as well, aspirations. And I think that's important. And Michael points to this rejection of the banking approach to education, where we're pouring the knowledge into the pupil or the athlete or the student. And we have to think of it from more of a democratic angle, and that all of us can learn along the way. And Carla in her article talks about how she had to let go of even the power relationships within research. And I found that to be, very captivating as well. In one part of her article, the authors write, instead of a process whereby refugee background young people need to fit in or assimilate by adopting core values communicated by sport organizations and funding bodies. Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? How we always try to get students, children to fit in, to assimilate, as opposed to thinking about a more inclusive approach. There was a lot going on, as I often say. I'm so grateful for Ash always including me in these important conversations. A lot going on. And my first thinking after reading Ash's blog and the article itself is, so what can we do in physical education to help facilitate some of Carla's and her co-authors' lessons that was learned from this? And I think there's a lot to consider. And lastly, it's the most important moving forward, because where are the biggest areas for physical education to improve, at least in this part of the world? SES, high needs areas, gender. That's where we can make huge advancements in physical education and continue to strengthen the profession. So the article certainly resonates.
Yeah, I mean, thanks both of you for your considerations of the paper. I mean, I was taken with it quite a lot, and I don't know where to start, really. I'm going to go through systematically as much as my notes suggest that we can go. Michael talked about the co-creation, the difference between a top-down approach, and it's about building the foundation. And bottom-up is very hard to do. And I think this shows the collaboration between, researchers and practitioners, in terms of how you can kind of support individuals or empower them to be their own agents of change. And I think that's really important. And then you look at what Michael described as the culturally responsive curriculum. And I think this is the danger is, you know, we've got a sense, as you say, of fitting in, getting kids to fit into what we expect. And actually what we want them to do is to stand out and create their own curriculum. But that requires a huge amount more work to do, because every class is creating a slightly different or a massively different experience in terms of what physical education looks like. And in that way, there are multiple ways of belonging and performing and being part of that. And it's a challenge to do this. And yeah, I think it's not seeing these people as being at risk, but seeing ourselves as being risk takers, I guess, that we're prepared to go and do these things. But it takes time. And yeah, the equality in women's sport is a massive one that you see in it. I try as much as I can to highlight it myself when I see it. And I did see the NCAA, you know, the men's gym with all the racks and everything, and the women's gym, which was basically about three weights that didn't weigh much more than about, 10 pounds. And then the massive amounts of space. And it just makes me cringe. And then there was a thing today about equal pay from, as you say, the American, see, the center forward or the I can't remember her name, because it's the wrong national team for me, and it's the comments below, it's not the action, it's the comments below that are show the deep-seated nature of this. And I think that was replicated in the girls' experience and the young women's experiences of football within this process. They bought into the opportunities that they were being given. They bought into the honour of representing the club and all its history and everything, and yet were stymied by the opportunities that they had and particularly the ways that the boys dominated. Even when it was a girls' practice, the boys dominated. But I think it was a really, really important point for me, and I think Cara picked out herself, is that she wanted to do certain things, but the girls didn't, and she took the step, the right step in my eyes, but also the hard step of not, setting from a research perspective, setting something in motion that had an effect would have been really good for her and the other authors. Well, we went in, we did this, we did an intervention, and wow, we've changed the world. But that wasn't what the girls wanted, and that to me is the heart of this democratic approach. It's creating an environment in which these young women could prosper and develop themselves. Because when there's researchers, you walk away, then that's it's what they've created in that environment that stays behind, and that's really, really important. And we've got to get away from, I don't know if you're aware of the work of John Elliott in Action Research, but he describes this notion of the infallible expert model. So teachers are seen as infallible experts, and therefore they can't be wrong. So they go into a lesson, they know what they want to do, they correct behavior, and they do it across multiple subjects. I mean, he's not a phys ed person, he's not a physical educator, but it's that kind of approach that we can't be wrong. And the other one was one that Do McDonald talked about. I don't know if you ever read the paper, it's something to do, it's like professional development in schools, and she describes this thing, the Australians call it a hen house, a chook house. So, she says when research, when people go in, and when change occurs, it's like a stone hitting a hen house roof. There's massive chaos. Everybody kicks off. There are birds everywhere. And over time, it settles down and they all go back to their nest and nothing really changes. And she used a term here that I use a lot, which is entrenched knowledge and practices override innovation in favor of tradition. And that to me has always been a really important thing with change, is that it's really easy to change quickly. It's really hard to keep that change over time. And Vicky Goodyear and I use the term, other people have, but the honeymoon period. So there's this, everything's lovely, everything's going on, everybody's getting on really well, and everything's exciting. And then suddenly you settle down and that honeymoon period ends. And over time and slowly you revert to the practices that you were looking at. And I think Cara's step here and the author's step here, one in bringing in a co-author from amongst the young women was fantastic. But then creating opportunities for them to be able to survive and exist after the research project is really, really important. And the needs of the researchers were subservient to the needs of the population here. And I think that is really important in terms of how we go, how, you know, this whole process goes forward. So, you know, I really enjoyed the paper. I was really challenged by it. And, you know, the work that Cara's done here in Australia, the work she's done in Brazil is, you know, is really exciting. And she's not afraid to talk to other people. And we keep saying her because there are three authors involved in this project and all the young women. So it's just remembering that you kind of get, you get, I get caught up on the et al. So Carla and colleagues. But that's kind of where I am for now. So back to you two.
Yeah, sure. I'll pick it back up and actually bring up some really strong points. And one that resonated with me was, you know, this paper challenged me for sure in a different context than I am used to. And picking up from previous topics and especially the ecological dynamics topic from last week, focusing in on the process for change in these young women. And it took time. It took tasks such as free writing tasks, drawing pictures, journaling, using photo voice over many, many weeks and months to finally understand their barriers in sport participation, and then use those barriers to create a program in which they could make social change within their club, and furthermore, make social change within their community as well. There's not enough representation. I think we can all agree that there's not enough female representation in leadership positions in sports and in physical education across the realm. We need to empower young women to be able to step themselves up into these leadership positions. And I think the notion that Carla and the authors really drove home for me is that these researchers came in with a completely different lens than most researchers do. This is not a top-down research approach. This is a co-creation approach where the participants in the study, in the qualitative study, were major contributors to the approach moving forward. And the communication of them involved in the program in their sport contributed to the changes that they wanted to make. And the authors were a guide for those changes, not the facilitator of those changes. So I think that in and of itself was really powerful and drove home the need for us to empower our students, empower our pupils and athletes based on their aspirations. And then they can go out in the community and they will be more equipped to make larger changes and the changes that they want to see in the world. So being in the trenches together throughout the process for appreciation, and then finally activism creates a sense of purpose and meaning. And, you know, going back to meaningful physical education, this is one thing that I definitely took out of that is being alongside of these students that we label as at risk or vulnerable, instead of coming at it from a top-down approach, instead of coming to say, I'm here to help you, say, you know, I'm here with you in the trenches and I am restoring you to and empowering you through reflective questioning and this foundational approach to lift you up and make you an owner of the change that you want to be making in life. So that is, you know, really the points that drove home for me. And I'm really happy that Ash brought this paper along and something that I'm going to be thinking critically about when I build a foundation with my own students.
I mean, I think before Clancy jumps in, I just want to say that this is Risto's suggestion in terms of the paper, and like the week before was Mo's, and people sent, you know, people putting papers to me is really important in this process because it widens my vocabulary and my searching. So, you know, I'd encourage anyone who's, you know, is interested in hearing an outcome of a paper or my take on a paper, at least to let me know, because otherwise you get a one-sided approach. So yeah, I'm talking now, so I'll go in quickly. I think one of the, you know, the situations here is that you talked about student voice and the empowerment, and I think that's really, really important. And I do think in some cases there is some lip service paid to that. You know, schools do surveys, what would you like to do? The majority chooses this, and that's what they do. And they tend to be quite narrow choices at times. And you do sometimes wonder how it might happen, you know, with more vision. And these things are one-off snapshots. They take 5 or 10 minutes to do. And while we're talking about, you know, five months here in terms of how that happens. And I think the investment, and I guess we're in physical education particularly, we're really stymied by the multi-activity sports technique model, where we're moving between, you know, lessons. We need to get this work covered within 6 weeks. We don't have time to sit down and have a democratic discussion about what this will look like. We need to get through this because we need to achieve this aim or this outcome, rather than taking the time to say, right, well, what are the aims and the outcomes that we can do with these young people, and then finding the route through to that. So, you know, I think there are problems there, and David Kirk and I recently talked about this within our own book, is what are the things that are stopping different approaches, and one of them is the multi-activity sports technique models, and one of them is the timetable. You know, when the bell goes, the lesson ends, and the bell decides what's going to happen in that sort of respect. So I think that's you know, those are difficulties. And again, I think within U Sport, then this is your practice slot. These are the people who are going to work with you. And I think Cara's and the author's notion of wanting to educate others to support these girls was really viable. But it was their perception of the process rather than, you know, the young people themselves. So I think that's important to remember as well. So it's a wicked problem, as they say.
Yeah, you know, Ash, you a couple things. First off, I guess thanks to Risto then for certainly recommending, because I agree. You know, with Michael, I agree with you. It challenges us, and it certainly makes you, you know, ponder and reflect. And I meant what I said. We've come a long way, but we have a long way to go still. But you know, back to, you know, you raised the article from Dr. McDonald, and I've seen, you know, taken part in. Listen to some of your other presentations. We were talking about, you know, you mentioned throwing the stone at the hen house, and I remember that article. Yes, and I remember you mentioned in other presentations the spray tan and that kind of thing, and from a professional development context. And I think it speaks to what we're chatting about here. I think you had said that you're much more impressed with someone who sustains professional development over a lengthy time period, whether it's a couple hours a night over 3 months versus 2 hours one time around, because that's much harder to do. And I think that's what we're seeing in this, is that to change is difficult. It takes time. And many times when we think about change, we're trying to intervene. We're trying to disrupt the problems that have arisen that have taken years and years to develop. So we have to understand that this takes time to obviously offset those issues. Go ahead.
I think there's a difference here between you and I, Clancy, and Michael, because I think that we're external to an organization and we don't understand the local context as well. I think if you're a teacher within a school or a coach within a club, you do and try to identify what needs to be changed and developing that over time. It can be an intervention. Now, the nature of that intervention, whether it's top down or bottom up or a hybrid approach, is you know, served by the individuals within that site of practice. And I think that's something that's taken me, you know, a while to kind of understanding and get to grips with, is that, you know, there is no such thing as meaningful PE. There is no such thing as sport education. There is no such thing as physical literacy as a proper noun, as a thing. And there's no such thing as being a participant in a football club. There isn't one way of doing it. And yet there is a perception of how it means to fit into this context. So, you know, you bring in another theory, which, you know, legitimate peripheral participation or communities of practice. There are ways of being within that community, and they can override, you know, innovation and change in those processes as well. So, you know, often the you know, this is not how we do it in this school, or this is not those. But I do think if there is motivation within the school to change, then that change should be allowed to occur. We shouldn't be so resistant to it. If the, you know, it's the rush to stability that kind of, you know, I guess concerns me more than anything, or the rush to equity, so everybody gets the same experience, and we're not tailoring that experience, you know, in terms of a quality to the, you know, the needs of everybody else, and. You know, I think there's some real differences there. But I just wanted to kind of respond to that point, because if Michael or any of the practitioners who've been onto this discussion decided that they wanted to talk, then they could do. You know, they could talk to this, and you know, they could make the changes themselves in their school. They just have to be in a position to do that. I mean, Michael, specifically, do you feel that you, and that might be putting you on the spot, but is that school going, oh, you can't change? I won't ask the question I'm going to ask, because that's a very leading question, but I'll stop there.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I come at it from a different perspective as a practitioner in the trenches in the field than teacher educators. You know, utilizing this research and trying to, you know, drive forward meaningful change within physical education at the grassroots level. I think your point is well taken, but I believe as a professional in the trenches, having the ability to make meaningful change, there's a lot of prongs that go into it, and there's a lot of steps involved in that change as well. So there's supervisors, administration, curriculum, staff, and certainly going up the ladder and moving up the ladder to create buy-in from those members, I think is really important in a school district, because if you go and change on your own and make these huge changes and create differing levels of engagement with your classes, and then there's something going on with another physical educator in your school or a different school, then people are going to ask questions about the process of that change. So there's a lot of, I think, layers to that change that I think are maybe not considered at a research level that need to, unfortunately. But I think they are much well-deserved changes that need to happen, that we need to be brave in the field and be courageous and give our feedback and go through that building the foundation approach that the author certainly took a substantial amount of time doing with these young women and empowering them. So I'm trying to take it from a real world perspective as best I can and try and put in some realism to it, and the barriers that I have and the barriers that my colleagues certainly have in making that change and creating that instability that might occur with that over time, because change is hard, and being uncomfortable, especially with veteran teachers that have been doing the same thing for years and years, might not be comfortable with some of the changes that certainly are illustrated here with success.
I wonder, and this is a genuine question, is, and it kind of goes back to this paper which we are talking about, is how much, so if, for instance, if you said to the school, and it's not an offer because it's far too far away, but I've got this guy, he's an ex-teacher, he's done this and he's done that, and he's offered to come and work with me in this process. I'd really like to look at the way, change occurred. How much would having a Clancy or a Seymour or a Casey or a Kirk or in this case a Guetti or a McDonald or a whatever, how much weight would that carry, do you think, in your in a district to engineer the change? And I ask the question deliberately because I think that the collaboration between universities and schools is really important. But so that's kind of a question to go back. If you went for it, it might be more difficult. But if you went for it with an ally or two, would that make a difference?
In my perspective, it absolutely would make a large difference. And I know Clancy has worked with school districts extensively through his university and creating that collaboration piece, which is so important to start driving the change and blending research and practice. So certainly coming at it with an ally or two to demonstrate the need for change would help with administration. And it could easily go up the ladder from there and create that buy-in, more so than just an individual coming at them with, maybe anecdotal evidence or, past perceptions about their experiences. So absolutely, Ash.
Yeah. And I think that's a little bit of what happened here is that, they were able to, the insider, outsider, and I think there were three kind of levels that you could think about the authors here in terms of what's happening. And I'm conscious of time, so I'm going to kind of come back to what I always write on the blog. And, we talk about tact. So think, act, and change. So between the three of us, I guess it's the question of, what made you think? I think we've talked about that already. But talking about what might make you act and what make you change would be, I think the answer to that is nothing. Because, as I say in the blog, if we think about things, and that's a great step forwards. But, is there anything that you might do differently in terms of what happens? And I'll take mine at the moment. I think I wrote it in the blog, is I would, make sure that I'm not implementing. So if I work with schools, I'm not implementing my version of models-based practice with them. I'm letting them, you take autonomy for it. And I think that's a change that's been coming for a while. And I don't think it's the start of the change, but I think it's a continuation of the change. So those are my kind of two, and that's my A and C. AC, my initials, there we go.
Yeah. I can jump in. I agree, Ash. And, we chatted a little bit already today that the researchers approach, Carla and her colleagues, the almost a hands-off approach, realizing that from a research context that they have to kind of take their hands off the steering wheel. I was moved by that. And I think that will be something that I look at more so moving forward in the future with some of my ventures, particularly. And then, the other question that I have, and I think it relates to change that, is, when reading this, I said to myself, so how can we apply an activist approach in physical education? Because, this was a sports program, and what does this look like? And what can we do with teacher candidates as teacher educators? And I think the table in the article, table one, really gives us some really interesting information, and mainly, and I think of it from, and again, this part of the world, the United States, particularly the older age group, phys ed, flounders at times, lacks meaning for secondary physical for students. these types of activities, reflection and introspection, this adds a whole nother layer. But as Michael pointed out, a meaningful layer of exercises that we can do from a sociocritical standpoint that I think can be very helpful for the practitioner moving forward. Again, you don't have to use it all, but there's some great ideas there.
Well, you need to read Kim Oliver and David Kirk's new book. Yes. On activist approach in PE.
Yes.
Kara worked with both David and Kim during her PhD, so that's where she's got it. But there is a book out, so I'd recommend that as a way of kind of considering this.
Sure.
So, Michael, just to finish us off.
Yeah, so from a practitioner's point of view, the activist approach certainly brought me back to this idea of inquiry-based learning and building relationships and solidarity with the students that I teach. And then more so getting a really deep understanding or a deeper understanding of some of the barriers and challenges that they have, and then formulating really responsive curriculum to meet the needs of those students by using planned reflective questioning, restorative practices, and being able to respond to those barriers and not only provide my instruction, but provide them the empowerment to go and make a social change outside of the walls of school.
Yeah.
Because it's not good enough anymore if we're just delivering quality instruction within the four walls of our school and our physical education domain. Now we need to take it up a level. And I think this activist approach certainly enlightened me to try and move beyond the walls and take that instruction, empower the students through this activist approach, through relationships, through understanding, through reflection, through inquiry, through utilizing and analyzing data. And certainly the authors give some great recommendations to do that, and then bringing it into the social world to drive and bridge the gap for all the inequalities that certainly exist in gender, socioeconomic status, and other separators alike. So that's how I think I can act as a practitioner.
And I take my hat off, because there's some big ambitions in terms of what's happening. And the best piece of advice I can give you is that it takes a huge amount of time and effort, and where you set out from won't be where you end up. So don't set targets, don't set end goals, because I think ultimately you'll disappoint yourself because your ideas will change and then evolve. So and be kind to yourself, Clancy.
I think that's a really good point, Ash, and I think you even referenced it in the article about don't worry about the ends, right? The process. And I think that's a critical piece of advice for Michael that I think is well taken, for sure.
And that's where our discussion's ended. I'd like to thank Michael and Clancy for lending their thoughts to our discussion. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and hopefully you'll choose to catch up with us next time when we talk about Sport for Peace. And that's where our discussions ended. I'd like to thank Cameron, Charlie, Michael and Mo for their insights as teachers, and Clancy and Alex as teacher educators and James as the author for lending their thoughts to our discussion. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and hopefully you'll choose to catch up with us next time when we talk about refugee background young women in grassroots football.